Well, hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show, streaming on BBS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally and podcasts. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silver, and my mission is to uplift the spirit of humanity. And I do that by showcasing amazing women who've typically risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph, from a point of chaos to confidence, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and sometimes globally as well. Now, as a female founder and entrepreneur, if we haven't met, I'm a certified executive coach and chartered HR professional, and I've helped thousands of people find excellent career choices, enhance their vision, get clarity on their goals, and in particular, in the past 10 years, supported senior women excel in their leadership and especially in their confidence. So today, I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are ready to flourish in business, to expand and engage their team, grow their business with ideal clients and more sales, for a sustainable business that's fun. Because I believe we can have balance as female entrepreneurs and be great role models for our children. And today, I'm delighted to have with me my guest, Kelly Fedorowicz. Am I pronouncing your name right, Kelly?
Exactly right, Yvonne.
Thank you. So lovely that you could join me. Now, Kelly is the matriarch of Dark Side Racing. Dark Side Racing is a Calgary-based, very community-focused, family-oriented group that is operated with Kelly and David and Nicholas Fedorowicz. So really a family of motorsports marketing professionals who specialized in what they describe as heart-pounding, nitro-fueled corporate experiences. Whoa!
Yeah.
Now this sounds really exciting, and I'm delighted that we're interviewing now because we just heard this morning that the Calgary and Alberta economy is slowly starting to revive and come back to life. And I know that with your racing, that you've also been sort of put on hold, and there's been lots of impact, I'm sure, because spring must be a very busy time in your world. So let's finish your formal sort of introduction, and then we'll get into learning more about your story. So Kelly is on a mission to become the fastest woman in Canada, and she's going to be strapping herself into the cockpit of a 10,000 horsepower, you're going to have to help me on this, nitro methane burning top fuel dragster.
That is correct. So the fuel that we run is nitromethane, and the car and category, the car is called a top fuel dragster, and the category of competition that we compete in is called top fuel. So this is all in the world of drag racing, and yes, exactly that. It is one of the fastest accelerating vehicles on the planet, and I am the only Canadian woman to ever pilot one of these monsters.
Woohoo! Now, yeah. I understand that these top fuel dragsters, they're not just race cars, but they're capable of covering a quarter mile with speeds that exceed 300 miles an hour. That's almost 500 kilometers in under 4 seconds.
Absolutely.
So the G-force on that is equivalent to what, the space shuttle when it leaves the launching pad?
Actually,
in Cape Canaveral?
We actually have the G-force. We are 5 G's at the hit is what we call. So we go from a complete dead standstill. I hit that throttle and boom, I am almost instantaneously at that 5 G's.
Wow.
And so, then let's not forget at the top end of the racetrack, when I pop my parachutes, I experience a negative 5 G's because of the rapid deceleration.
Wow. So for you, I've heard a little bit about your story, but I would love to dive into, you know, how did you get started in this world? Because it sounds like it's been in a very it's now very all-encompassing. I mean, it really is a family business, and you're doing some great things in the community, which we can talk about later as well, connected to your hubby, David. So how did this all get started? I'm curious.
It all started with a chance encounter on my 20th birthday. So we have to go all the way back to 1986. I was out celebrating my 20th birthday with a couple of girlfriends, and I happened to meet my now husband, David. So David has 11 years on me. He was 31 at the time when we first met. And so with his life experience, the added 11 years, he had been passionate about drag racing since he was a kid. And he grew up in small town Neepawa, Manitoba. Nobody really knows. I've talked to his mother about this at great length, and nobody really knows for sure where David became so impassioned with the world of drag racing. But, you know, he was born in 1955. The 70s, it was really a car culture. The racing was just part of the world at that time. And so when I met David on my 20th birthday, shortly thereafter, he showed me the race car that he had. He talked about the different races and the racetracks that they went out to. And there was just something inside of me that resonated. David and I clicked. We hit it off immediately. We were best friends for a full year and a half before we took it to anything romantic. And in that time, he invited me to come learn more about the race car. And it was just something that I connected with, and it became a lifelong passion of ours.
Wow. So what kind of profession were you in back then when you first met him? You said you were around 20.
There wasn't much of a profession. I had gone to university for a year and realized that really wasn't where I wanted to be at the time. I took off with a girlfriend and we moved out to Edmonton. And so it was just doing this and that. You know, I worked at Shoppers Drug Mart in my 20s. I worked at a restaurant in my teenage years. When I met David, we sat down and we discussed life and looked at it in 5-year plans. David was working at the University of Manitoba at the time. He was an engineer research technologist, and he was dissatisfied and borderline disgruntled with where he was going with his career, because he knew that he wanted to be doing something where he could pursue his true passion, and that would be the world of drag racing. And so together, something that I had always been interested in was marketing, and it was almost a becoming an entrepreneur back in 1986, 87 wasn't really something, entrepreneurship wasn't something that people really understood. And so when I quit my job working at a grocery store at the time, and Dave retired from the University of Manitoba, and together we decided that we put together marketing packages. I did a lot of reading, and we decided that we were going to make our mark, and we were going to live life according to our rules. And it's something that we've stuck with.
Well, I love the fact that you've taken a passion and turned it into a business.
Yes.
And so, you know, when I'm working with women entrepreneurs, you know, very often they come to me because they've been in business for a couple of years, and now they're realizing that they've built this monster that's running them, and it's not something that they're feeling quite as passionate about. And so very often, you know, we go back with my, it's called the Flourish Program. We go back and we re-envision, re-energize and revitalize the business by going back to the basics and looking at, you know, what was their vision to begin with? How is it best to monetize it? And then how do they optimize it so that they can actually have a vacation?
Right.
Now, in your world, you know, living here in Calgary, I think you said that there are several tracks you can race in Alberta. Are you staying in Canada with your racing, or are you going all over North America? Because
we are.
In this
incarnation of the racing company, we decided in 2012, we got back into the racing game in 2012, and we decided that we were going to focus on the Canadian economy, and we were going to focus on keeping it in Canada. So back in the late 80s, the early 90s, we had an opportunity, a window of opportunity presented itself, where my husband was offered a job in Florida working at a drag racing school. We had an opportunity to travel to Japan several times, actually. We had an opportunity to crisscross the United States. There were two sanctioning bodies back in the early 90s. There were two sanctioning bodies, and there was also a thing called match racing. So we were able to pursue our dreams and do it in the United States, where drag racing really, it is a cultural event that is embraced the way hockey is in Canada, I guess, is the best comparison I could give. People, when you walk into the local convenience stores, there are the cardboard cutouts of your favorite drag racer standing there. You know, if they're sponsored by Coca-Cola, there's your favorite racer with their fire suit on with Coca-Cola. Whoever the corporate sponsor may happen to be, I'm not trying to give any specific names, but it was embraced by the community on a different level. So we relished the opportunity to race in that way. Back then, the visas, we had a B1, B2 working visa that allowed us to spend extended periods of time in the United States. But we also recognized we had a son. While we spent a lot of road, we recognized that the Canadian medical superior to that in the United States. And mm-hmm. we also recognize that the Canadian education, the education was something that we recognized that when the time was going to come for Nicholas, our son, who was, we hit the road when Nicholas was only weeks old. So come time for Nicholas to go to kindergarten, we knew that there was going to have to be either where we would have major corporate funding that would allow us to be able to do private schools or whatever the case may be if we were going to stay down in the States. But ultimately, we decided that we were going to come back into Canada. And when we readdressed the racing dream, we decided that we wanted to do something that would allow us to stay in Canada.
Well, certainly, you know, just the difference in healthcare systems is massive. But, you know, I fully understand. I mean, if you were traveling around in a, you were traveling around in a big rig, weren't you?
18-wheeler, right. We had an 18-wheeler. And on the back of the tractor, we had what was called a drone box, and we completely outfitted that the way you would a trailer. So it had the bench seats, the table that would fold down. We had a bunk bed. We had a computer in there. I mean, everything. We were self-sufficient to be able to live on the road when we were on the road. But you also have to recognize that racing, it's an expensive business that is reliant on corporate sponsors. Right. And as Canadians going into the United States, we were at a disadvantage because American sponsors were more likely to sponsor American teams. Right. And when we crossed the border from Canada into the United States, the value that we brought to the table to our Canadian sponsors was pretty much lost because we didn't have the wide access to all of the different video opportunities. Now you don't just have to, our ability to share stories now comes from a multitude of different platforms. Back in the day, you had one, and if that sports channel wasn't aired in there was no way for us to bring return on investment, the marketing dollars that a sponsor would invest in us. So it was kind of a catch-22 situation we found ourselves in.
Well, I imagine now that, you know, particularly in Calgary, because the economy has, you know, even in the last 4 or 5 years been a bit in a bit of a slump. I imagine that you have some very deep relationships with some of those Canadian organizations who are looking to expand, you know, down in the US and want to get their name out. And obviously, if there's not that many people in Canada that are racing at this level, then you would be a prime candidate in that category, right?
Well, and that's exactly it. We turned our focus away from competition, and we refocused on marketing and programs that we could develop that would bring sponsors. So while we would love to be able to go, so our sanctioning body, okay, and we would love to be able to go to the full season of NHRA races and be competitors. But at this point, look at the reality of the situation, and the reality of the situation is there's not a lot of international Canadian companies that would value from the millions of dollars to be able to compete the full calendar of events in the NHRA in the top fuel category is a multi-million dollar iteration. And so we could bring value programs to our Canadian partners through our corporate programs, still deliver excitement and still connect with their people that they're interested in connecting with, but we were able to connect with them on a grassroots level. So it's the same thing, only different. It's a matter of adapting for the situation that is for you. If there were Canadian racetracks and there was a series that we could compete in, we would be doing that. And actually, that is something that we're working to build behind the scenes, is Canadian racers competing in our level so that we do have a series that we were able to promote. But in the meantime, there are many ways for us to be able to connect with our community through our racing program.
Right. Well, let's look at the racing programs, excuse me, a little bit further into this interview. I am really curious to learn some tips from you, because obviously, you know, you've been working in a world that is a male-dominated field for an awful long time. So I'm curious, you know, what are some of the top, you know, 3 to 5 things that you've learned that you would love to share with audience members? I mean, most of our audience is women. A lot of them are working in a male-dominated world. And even if this is not an environment, like an office environment, I think that there are so many opportunities for women to be earning excellent income in the field. And yet a lot of that gets discarded because they're not quite sure how they're going to fit in. So tell me about what you've learned about working in a male dominated field.
Well, a voice. You have to have a voice. If you're going to come to the table and you're going to want to compete in a male dominated world, you have to be able to take the punches. And men operate, from what I've discovered, in different ways. Whereas women are more about feelings, men are more about accomplishments. And I don't know, I mean, nothing is cut and dry. So, you know, that, but I have discovered that, I mean, I have had men tell my husband that he needs to get control of his wife because I'm an consistent person, you know, really. And so when I was in my 20s, and these kind of comments, because I've always been, my husband has always looked at me as his equal partner. And so I always felt that I was an equal partner. But then there's certain attitudes in certain, you know, parts of the world where women aren't treated as equals. And so you simply have to lift your shoulders, raise your head tall, have confidence in your ability, and dismiss the naysayers. There's plenty of times where I've come home and just wanted to sob because I wasn't taken seriously, because I wasn't given the respect that I thought that I deserved. And ultimately, it comes down to believing in yourself. You know, not everybody's going to buy your story. Not everybody's going to buy your pitch. So like everything in life, you have to be able to accept the no's, let them go, and keep moving forward to find the yeses. I find in life that I often have times, I have spent more time being frustrated and trying to figure out why people said no. And as I've gotten older, at 53 years old, I now recognize it's far more productive and far more important to figure out what it was that brought the yeses, because it's the yeses that allow us to continue to move forward.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you can chase 1,000 no's, but if you put your energy on which one said yes and why, that's a much better investment of time and energy, for sure.
It is. Well, and, you know, I'm an avid power walker. I get out and my time to connect and recenter myself, I've really had to make a concerted effort. If I'm out on a walk and I've had something wonderful happen to me and something negative happen to me in the same day, I would find myself dwelling on the negative instead of celebrating the positive. So mm-hmm. It really takes a shift in your mindset to say, stop focusing on the negative. Let's celebrate the positives.
Yeah. Well, I think as women, because as you said, you know, we have that caring, nurturing attitude by nature, we want to make sure that everybody feels okay about mm-hmm. what's going on around them, because we care. And, you know, some, not to say that all men are in the same, you know, painted with the same brush, but we just, you know, that's a natural competence that we bring. And in fact, when I talk in my, have a Bold Women Leaders event, actually the next one's coming up, it's now an online event instead of at the Calgary Petroleum Club. It's called How Bold Women Lead: Confident Conversations. And one of the pieces of research that I bring into that is some of the women's leadership competences, where there's research to show that women actually have natural competences and we do certain things better than our male counterparts. So for example, you know, certainly when it comes for developing others, inspiring and motivating others, building relationships, championing change, collaboration, teamwork, high integrity, honesty, taking initiative. You know, those are all things that, oh, and establishing stretch goals too. Those are all things that women are actually doing more effectively than men in this research study. So I think it's important that we know what it is that we bring to the table. And as you said, we're very firm in standing up for ourselves, because, you know, one word, and this is what I actually wrote my book about, this is, you know, where one word can make a whole bunch of difference. Mm-hmm. If we include the word just, oh, I just wanted to XYZ, well, you just reduce the whole power of the sentence with one unnecessary word that now sounds like you're begging.
Right. Oh, yeah, I think we need to be more bold. We women need to learn to be more bold and ask more.
Yes, totally. Well, that was one of the reasons why I invested 2 years of my time writing down. I'd had a number of female clients, especially over the past 10 years when I've been working solely as a coach. I mean, I'd done a lot of, you know, HR consulting and, you know, corporate level client business development, etc. before, but the last 10 years dedicated to coaching in particular, what I found was I was telling my female clients the same things over and over and over again, because they worked. Right? Right. And a lot of it was to do with being finely tuned to listening to the language they were using, the energy behind it, what they weren't saying, and decided to write this book called Words, Women, and Wisdom: The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, and start sharing some of those language elements to a much broader audience so that every woman had a chance to elevate their confidence, ask for what they want, and get it. Because it is so all about the questions, right?
It is, yeah.
And I grew up with my dad, who was very, very critical. I mean, he was a PTSD survivor. Well, survivor, I guess, is debatable, but right. He was impacted when he came back from the war, took a bullet in Dunkirk, and he came back a very angry man. And of course, there was hundreds of thousands of men coming back from the war. They just didn't have the capacity in England back then to treat them. And so he was very critical, very angry, always finding fault with something. And I learned very early on with him that in order to get what I wanted, I'd have to give him a choice. So I'd basically say, you know, I can do this or I can do this, which worked better. And that way I at least increased the odds by 50% of getting something that I wanted.
Wow. Good
and I was,
strategy.
I think I was 5 when I figured that out.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we all have life experiences. We learn from those. We bring that, that life experience, those lessons into how our beliefs evolve and how our confidence evolves as well. And sometimes one little thing can knock us off track, and it takes refocusing, and potentially that's why people work with a coach, to get them back on track. So that they can have a chance to persevere through. Now, in your case, I think you had also a little bit of an upset in your life with prostate cancer. Are you open to thinking a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What happened, Kelly?
So David was 49 years old. And I don't know why. I would have to attribute it to probably I saw something on TV that just registered in my brain. So part of our racing requires that we have annual physicals. And so it was time for David to go down to see the doctor for his annual physical. And I suggested to him that he ask our family GP for a PSA test. And he, you know, whatever, he didn't make a big deal out of it. I didn't make a big deal out of it, but I decided when he was heading down to the appointment, as a reminder, I just grabbed a stick-em note and I wrote a reminder on it for him to get his PSA tested. Well, David got down to the doctor, and at the end of all of the physical stuff that he had to do for his competition license, he asked about the PSA test, and the doctor's response to him was, "You're going to be 50 next year. Let's do it next year when we're doing all of the stuff for your 50th birthday." And David chuckled and he said, "She sent me down with a stick-em note. You and I both know that if we don't do it now, she's going to send me back. So why don't we just get it done?" And so they chuckled, and it was just a simple blood test. And so David left the doctor's office thinking that everything was going to be fine. Well, about a week later, he got a phone call that the blood test showed that his PSA was high and he needed to go in for some more tests. And so that started a journey for us at David. Age 49, David was diagnosed with early stage prostate cancer. I don't know what that initial diagnosis would have been if the cancer would have been given a full year to grow unchecked. Mm. So it was the prostate cancer itself, it impacted us, but only on put it this way, David asked that we not share it with anybody else in the family because he didn't require surgery. One of the good things about an early prostate cancer diagnosis is you have options. So active surveillance is one of the options, which means you just now monitor. You go for regular blood tests and you monitor to see if you have a baseline now to see if there's any spikes where action is needed.
Right.
The next option is an option called brachytherapy, and that's where they implant radioactive seeds directly into your prostate gland. So there's needles that have to go through your body to get into the prostate gland, but you don't have to open up your body to remove the prostate gland. And so one of the specialists suggested to David that he have a radical prostatectomy. And then he also had the option of the brachytherapy to have the radioactive seeds. So David chose the brachytherapy, and it wasn't until 2 years after David had successful brachytherapy that we actually started sharing with our family members that David had gone through, or we had gone through, a prostate cancer journey. And one of the real life-changing comments came from David's mother, who was just saddened when she learned that her son had gone through a cancer journey without her being able to tell him she was there for him, to tell him. I realized that it was selfish of us. And I made a promise to our entire family that never again would I withhold critical medical information for any of us from the rest of the family, because I also recognized that David is a very solitary person. He's a very private person. And one of the reasons that he decided not to disclose that he had prostate cancer was because we are self-employed, and he didn't want to do anything that would endanger our current situation. So we didn't know for certain that a sponsor might have said, you know what, you're sick, we're gonna pass this year because you're sick. And right. So it was self-preservation for us in a business sense, but then again, it was selfish of us that is what my takeaway from it, because I didn't allow the rest of our family to truly tell David how much he's loved. And you know, sometimes healing thoughts go a long way in actual healing. And we decided when we shared with family that we were comfortable, or David was comfortable, to start sharing our story with other people. And that's when the opportunity with our race car, we recognized we have this wonderful moving billboard that connects us with the community. So we simply reached out to a local support group and said, we've done this prostate cancer journey. If there's any way we could be of service to you, we'd like to donate some space on the side of our race car for you to be able to put your decal. And if you're interested in having any of your people come out to the events, drag racing is a male-dominated sport. We assumed that their demographics were the same demographics in large part to the demographics that we would be able to deliver. And so that's how we started our community work to help promote prostate cancer awareness with our race car.
Mm. Well, Kelly, I know that was, you know, a deeply personal share. So I thank you for being so open. And I think there's such an important message, or a couple of messages that come through that is, first off, as women, always, always, always listen to your intuition, because it will never steer you wrong. And if you don't listen to it, I mean, you know, when I was working in senior human resources roles early in my career, I mean, I interviewed and hired about 6,000 people in my career. So I got pretty good at it. And I knew that there were certain people that were not going to be a fit. And so often I would have the male manager saying, no, I just want anybody, just give me anybody. And I had to take a stand to say, you know what, this is going to maybe work out for 3 months. And after that, it's going to upset your whole team. It's not going to be a good long-term fit. And I don't want you to get yourself in a pickle. And so, you know, initially I didn't have the confidence to say no, but I sure quickly built it up, because my work was doubling and tripling when I had to rehire to backfill that spot because it wasn't a great fit. So always listen to your intuition. because when I did make a decision to do that, it saved me hours and hours and hours of work. And that niggly feeling that something is wrong will never go away.
Right,
it just
right.
gets worse. And then you say, well, why didn't I listen to my intuition? So that's an important point.
Yeah.
Right. So thank you for listening to your intuition. And, you know, potentially that could have, who knows, right? What could have happened if not? And secondly, I love talking to successful women entrepreneurs, or in this case, family entrepreneur group that are now giving back in some way to the community. So this year of 2020 has been talking predominantly to women entrepreneurs who have a social enterprise passion and are doing something in their business that connects and ties them back to, I don't think of it as giving back to the community, because to me that almost feels like we're taking something away. And I think that we are enriching the possibility in the community. And certainly when you put the logo or signage on one of your cars, I mean, it's pretty quickly going past you at the speed that you're describing. However, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, gathering around at the end, because they don't normally get to stand next to something that goes quite so fast.
Oh, and that drag racing is the most interactive of all motorsports. So drag racing, the price of admission gets you into the pits. So we actually do interact with all of those fans that you see in the stands. When they're not in the stands, they are in the pits. Now, we have stanchions, so they don't get to come into our personal pit, but they're able to walk and watch and interact. We do autograph sessions. It is incredibly the spectator experience is something that you just don't see in any other sports.
I'm intrigued. I mean, but with COVID, right? You know, obviously COVID-19 has altered the landscape for majority of business owners in terms of, you know, how they run their business, and certainly any groups where there's large gatherings. You know, it's been really unsettling this year. I mean, to have the Calgary Stampede, which has been going for, you know, 110 years, I think it was, 100 plus nice. Years, to have that not able to go forwards this year. I mean, there's so much planning that goes into a massive tourism event like that, and yet that's going to be a big economic hit. So what would you like to see happen next for Dark Side to really come out of the, you know, the dark side, if you'll pardon that pun, and, you know, and reemerge into the light and still have a successful year this year? What needs to happen?
Well, we are fortunate that we have been focusing on the marketing aspect of what we do. So the racetracks for us provide a wonderful backdrop for our corporate activities. What we're grateful for is we still have the ability to host those corporate events. The events that we host themselves are very intimate experiences. We bring in our corporate clients and we immerse them and make them part of our team for the day that they're with us. So that intimate experience, there's more adrenaline. I mean, we're gonna have to adapt to the new reality of not having 15,000 people as a backdrop, but the experiences, the actual experience that we deliver through our programs are grassroots face-to-face. So we're still able to do that. We're going to be able to establish the crew, the bare bones minimum number of crew we need to be able to put on a show. And then whatever the province determines that we could have for maximum capacity for attendance numbers. So say we're working with 15, well, we have 5 Dark Side Racing crew members, and then we have 10 guests, and those guests will be welcomed into our area. We will observe all of the social distancing. We'll have microphones. It's all going to be adapting to the new reality, the new normal.
Right.
But those events are still going to be able to go on. We're still going to be able to teach our guests about why nitromethane is used to power these cars. We're going to be able to still talk about, you know, as a driver, what it feels like to go through 5 G's at the hip. as the first Canadian woman to ever pilot one of these cars, you know, these conversations are still able to happen. We just aren't going to have that exciting backdrop. So we're moving forward. Our 2020, we've partnered with Parts Source Canada for 2020, and we are delighted that everything is a full move forward with our 2020 campaign, because that's exactly the point they said, that what they've come on board for is the dark side racing experience. Whether we're at a racetrack or whether we're at their corporate office is somewhat irrelevant, because that experience, those experiences that we deliver, are the one-on-one, face-to-face, and that's what brings value to our corporate partners.
Well, it certainly sounds as though, you know, drag racing is this combination of, you know, cutting edge science and technology and critical thinking and grit and determination. But there's an element of excitement to it that I don't know that you could get anywhere else. I asked my husband for my most recent birthday. It was a big birthday with a zero. And, you know, he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't need any more stuff. So, you know, let me go skydiving or something.
Right.
But it was a bit too early in Calgary to be skydiving. They don't open till May, I guess. So he ended up getting me a ticket for iFly, which was fun. I mean, it wasn't quite the same rush, but it was still fun, and you got right. the overall experience in the same amount of time coming down. But this would be, as a woman, I would think this would be really, really something to be exhilarating, and to be the fastest Canadian woman. Whoa, that's a really big goal. Wow.
It's lofty, yeah. My hashtag is, I don't do subtle.
I don't do subtle.
Yes. That is my hashtag. Yeah.
Love it. So the corporate programs that you were talking about basically are opportunities for advertising on the race cars, and then also for these pit experiences. Is that what you call them, or what do you call them?
Right. Well, yeah, they're track day experiences, they're corporate experiences, and then depending on where we host the event, if we bring them out to a racetrack, if we, you know, even with what's going on with the current COVID situation, track rentals are going to be an opportunity. So we might not be able to pack 15,000 people into a facility, but we're still going to be able to, whatever that number is going to be when we're allowed to move out of our restrictive situation, the world that we're living in today, and start moving out of that, we're going to be able to absolutely move forward and create these exciting opportunities through the corporate programs that we have.
Lovely. So who would be like an ideal client? I mean, I've got my marketing hat on this week, as we're starting to see, you know, coming into the light again. You obviously have a ton of experience over the years learning how to market something so unique. So, you know, who would be an ideal client for these track day experiences?
Just about any industry. There obviously has to be an interest in automotive, right. But science, I mean, because as you said, that there is the critical thinking that's such a huge component of it. Drag racing is a very technical sport. So any industry that has levels of technicality to it, obviously automotive is a key component. So we've worked with car dealers, we've dealt with motorcycle dealers, we've dealt with muffler shops, we've dealt with oil change shops. There's so many industries that are connected to the car world. Anything that wants to bring value and an experience to whether you're looking for your corporate clients, whether you're looking for employee retention is another one. We do a lot of work with companies who are interested in rewarding their employees, because keeping employees satisfied and content in the current their current world is very, very important. So if you could bring in ways to build loyalty through these programs, that's another great example of companies that they look to us for our programs to build loyalty.
Right. Well, certainly, whenever we have an economic dip, I think that the companies that do really well are those that have been around for a number of years already, have some, retained earnings, and are able to look past the short-term blip and say, once the hiring, once the economy really starts to pick up again, if I haven't utilized this time to start investing in my employees in some way, shape, or form, whether that's training, whether it's coaching, mentorship programs, yoga classes internally, or something that's, an external, team building, or something that's a really unique experience like what you offer. I think that those are the companies that are going to risk losing people. Because as soon as the economy starts thriving again, if you've been treated, kind of poorly during this experience and not been fully supported working from home, and it's been like, a rude awakening, then you're going to lose your best talent. And so employee retention is always a piece that I look at partly because of my HR background, I think.
Right. But it's true. And I mean, if that's the difference that you could, by having an event that simply puts a smile on your employee's face, but makes them think back fondly of that experience, it's amazing how far that goes in the psyche of people. If you could create an experience that they could look back fondly, they see value in that, and suddenly you have an employee that's more engaged, that's more committed, and loyal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly sounds like you've got a really insightful marketing brain coming to this topic, because, post-crisis consumer, consumer actions. I mean, we really do need to reshape some of these attitudes towards employee retention, and you have a thrill of a lifetime package. So, it's very intriguing, Kelly. Very intriguing.
Thank you. In our
last few minutes together here, just thinking, you've obviously learned a ton about marketing over the years, and I'm curious to learn, is there one or two nuggets that you're willing to share? One or two marketing trends maybe that you're seeing, because you're obviously doing such a great job of this with a very unique product, and you've had obviously COVID to deal with too. And yet you sound like you've got a really solid plan.
Well, experiences for what I've discovered through our marketing programs is creating experiences is one of the most important things for us in our, and I can't speak for areas that I don't have experience in, but I do know for certain that we are moving into a time where, like you said, that was the perfect, people don't need more things. We've really come to a point in our lives where we could go to the store, we could go to the internet to just to buy anything that we need. People are looking for deeper ways to connect with themselves, to connect with other people. So that's one of the key things that we do with our marketing, is develop ways that we could connect profoundly with the people that we speak to. So that's key. And moving forward with the COVID, we have an opportunity to redefine what marketing is going to look like. So while we're taking it from a time of despair, we have an opportunity to turn despair into something positive. And we're going to keep on focusing on those experiences so that we could continue connecting with community and just growing from there. Many people have experiences that they could talk about, going to a rock concert where there were 10,000 people. Well, we are going to have to look to ways that connect people that a year ago we might have looked at as being kind of ho-hum. But I think just the opportunity to be allowed back outside, to be allowed back with a group of people, even if we're standing 6 feet apart, we're going to be able to embrace the freedoms that we have in ways that we never appreciated before.
Well, certainly talking about that topic of freedom, I mean, I understood that you had mid-year last year, you had a freak injury while you were on the racetrack, rupturing your Achilles tendon and needed some surgery and rehab. So I'm delighted that this 2020 year is going to be a year for, you know, coming back, your comeback tour, as it were. And you're taking this stance of, you know, redefining disparity and moving it into a positive arena. I love that. So what can we as women do to be supporting you in your mission to be the only Canadian woman to ever pilot a top fuel dragster, to get that fastest woman in Canada tag?
Well, get involved. If you don't know what drag racing is, if you've never been to a drag race, check us out. We're on social media. We're on Facebook. Facebook is, you put a slash darkside.ca, you'll get to our, or you just do a search for Darkside Racing. Come on out, check us out. And if you could be part of it, we would love to have you there. Women, more and more women are getting involved in drag racing. While I am the only Canadian woman to pilot a top fuel dragster in the United States, my sisters in the United States are doing it, and they are doing it well. We have world champions. Our sanctioning body, the NHRA, women have won championships in the top category of drag racing. So it is a world that offers excitement, and it's just an absolute blast. We would love for more women to find out about drag racing and get involved.
Lovely. So also on your website, darksideracing.ca /2020corp programs, you have some information on there about your corporate programs. And certainly if they wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that, Kelly?
So any of the contact buttons on the Dark Side Racing website will get you to me. Kelly@darkside.ca is my email address, and just about any of the platforms, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Facebook, whether it's LinkedIn, reach out. You're going to get in touch with me. I do spearhead our marketing programs, so chances are you're going to get the email will come in to me, and I would love to answer any questions.
Excellent. Well, I've been so excited to have a chance to chat with you today. Obviously, you're a woman with a very savvy business and marketing mind. You're working in a male-dominated field and just rocking it. And you have big goals and big dreams. And that is definitely the kinds of interview that we want to be showcasing on the Words, Women, and Wisdom show. So I thank you for sharing a little bit more about your life and your perspectives today, and really look forward to continued conversation. So if you're one of those women listening today and thinking, wow, that was really inspiring, I want to continue to evolve myself and continue my own personal growth, I highly recommend checking out the Bold Women event that I'm hosting May 12th. It's going to be an online event. It's listed on Eventbrite. And when I put this post for the replay link after the show airs live, I'll put it on Facebook to link to that. It's basically looking at how bold women lead through confident conversations. So that's the breakfast session from 7:30 until 10. Now you have to bring your own breakfast. So technically, if you don't want to do the extra networking, you could come at 8 o'clock. So 8 till 10 for content. And the kind of discussion that you don't normally have, because we tend to have these silos in organizations where women don't actually have a chance to have a collaborative conversation unless it's based around a project. It's not just talking about their perspective as a woman working in a corporate world. The other thing is on the 15th of May, I have the next Women and Wisdom Connect, which is again an online gathering for women entrepreneurs, leaders, and founders who want to have a chance to expand their networks outside of Calgary, Canada, maybe internationally as well. The last one we had individuals from the US, from Mexico, and from Canada. And that is to brainstorm and get some different perspectives using a structured process over noon, so Zoom at noon, just for an hour. And it sounds like my dog is getting antsy in the background here. So good job, we're wrapping up. So have a lovely week, Kelly, and I look forward to staying in touch. Thank you for sharing today.
Thank you, Yvonne. It was a pleasure.
Okay, bye for now.